becoming a parent, I think, was the moment in my life where I grew up. Danielle's probably disagreeing with that to some point, but that's when I became responsible for life beyond my own. The marriage, our life together was all important, but when we became parents, we became responsible for the doings of others, not just ourselves. Becoming that parent, I then wondered what I should tell my kids. I know, looking at me, it's hard to believe I was anything but a perfect child. But I will tell you that at times I was not. So in that, do you convey your personal stupidity to your children? Do you let them know that once in a while mom and dad weren't perfect? I think you have to be honest with your kids. It concerns me when we're talking that they think I have no idea what they're going through. Mark this morning said it in class. At some point, and I think Junior said it, at what point do your kids become smarter than you are? And it varies. I, as a child, was not spanked. Doesn't mean I didn't deserve to be spanked. That just means I was never spanked. There is still a huge respect for my parents. Spanking didn't instill that. Now, maybe understanding what was going on with that should have been spanked into me. Might have helped later. But at that point, it didn't. Growing up, I found out my own parents were not perfect. It's a huge step. I realized at that point they made mistakes too. We are all in this room imperfect. We are all in this room sinners. That's how we are. John 8:7, it says, "So when they continued asking him, he raised himself up and said to them, 'Let he who is without sin among you cast the first stone.'" We are all sinners and imperfect. All of us have tried to go down the right path and stay there. And I am very confident in saying that. Everyone in this room has tried to be as good as they could possibly be and do the right thing all the time for a period of time. And then failed. Because we are not able to stay in the right forever. If you have tried and failed, you're not alone. And you're certainly not the first. So if that concerns you, let me tell you out front that if you think you're the only one, I have just joined your club. Because I have said to myself that when someone cuts me off on the freeway, I will take it happily. I have said when someone is driving as slow as humanly possible in the passing lane that I will accept it graciously and wait for them to move right before I laid on the horn. All right? These are things that you make mistakes about. We have all failed. Okay? That's not the sin. Not recognizing it is the issue. In Romans 7:15, it says, "For what I am doing, I do not understand. For what I will to do, I do not practice. But what I hate, that I do." When you know the right thing and you make that mistake, do you feel good about it? Do you say, when I lay on that horn, "Ah, come on, what are you doing?" I do now. Now I just try and get into the other lane. And not worry about that passing lane. God knows and supports us in that decision to be good. He wants us to go down the path of righteousness, to come to Him, to serve Him. He knows we wish and desire to be sinless. Okay, everyone should know that. like Paul, God knew there would be conflict within us. He knew that sometimes good and bad would fight. He knew that sometimes, even though we knew we should be doing something else, we'd do another. That also is not new, and if you think you're the only one that ever fell into that, again, I am in your club. Knowing the right thing and doing the right thing will always be the toughest thing to do. But it is the Christian way. We know what's right. We know what we are to do. We also don't always get it done. When you have these conflicts, faith and perseverance is what arises from a conflict. So again, from that time where I started to grow up, I realized that because things got tough, that was not the excuse to jump the shark and go the other way. That was the place where I had to come back, think about what I was doing, slow everything down around me, and then make sure I stepped out the right direction instead of the wrong direction. Again, faith and perseverance is what begins from a conflict of the soul, of the mind, and of the body. Because what you need there is the strength to carry on and the faith to believe that you are going the right direction so that you, when you head that way, there is no question. The step that you take in that direction, you know to be right, and that's the way you go. Job 1 and 22. Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. What he is saying there is because things are taken away from me, because things are going wrong for me, because things are not perfectly rosy, now means nothing. Your direction to God, your purpose to God, and your commitment to God is the same. Because things that are happening to you in this life, in this world, are not the perfect things, doesn't mean you have the opportunity to go the other direction. That it'll be okay. Right? Because things are going wrong, because things are getting tough, means that you have to have the faith and perseverance to go forward. And to be strong, to step up. Ecclesiastes 5:6. Do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin, nor say before the messenger of God that it was an error. Why should God be angry at your excuse and destroy the work of your hands? For in the multitude of dreams and man, word, or in many words, excuse me, there is also vanity. But fear God. We're to fear God, to respect God. In the same way that I respect my parents, in the same way I hope you respect your parents, that is the fear that they're talking about. It is not a fear and trembling. I will tell you that as a grown man and as an independent, opinionated, sometimes loud and overbearing grown man, I am scared of hell. And I will say that in front of you because it does not make me ashamed. I am scared of hell. I do not want to be there. I think of wailing, gnashing of teeth, and I think of hell as being a spot that scares you personally the most. And I think along with that wailing, gnashing of teeth, in my own personal place, there would be a hot, dark box that was cramped, and I would be in it forever. That is what I think of. So if you have something and you are not scared of hell, that isn't what causes me to be here. Okay, that fear. That fear is what sometimes corrects things in my mind. That fear is what causes me to give God the respect that He is due. Respect is what drives me to prayer. Faith and perseverance should be what drives you beyond that. Okay, there is no crime. There is no misgiving. And it doesn't make you weak to be afraid of something. I would never skydive either. I'm not going to jump out of a plane unless that plane is going down and somebody's pushing me. All right? That does not make me stupid, in my own opinion. There are many of you who that might sound great. Good for you. I promise I'll film it from the ground. I'm not going to do it. Okay? Hell is the way I think of jumping out of a plane. I'm not going to go there. I don't want to go there. being free of sin doesn't mean you're never going to do the wrong thing again. So many times I think we get caught up in this perfection drive that you think you can't make a mistake. Right now, I have kids that are not perfect. They know what I expect. I expect the attempt for perfection. Could barely get it out. Does that mean they're not going to make mistakes? No. Should you, when you strive to be God's son, God's daughter, worry that once in a while you make a mistake? I think you should remember it, because I think that's what makes it a mistake. To do something over and over again is stupidity, if you know it's wrong. To do something wrong once is a mistake. A mistake can be fixed. A mistake can be recognized. And a mistake is something that you don't have to repeat. We become a servant of God. Don't let your mouth cause your flesh to sin. I think I've discussed before my presence at ball games. All right? And to be precise, basketball games. Nothing irritates me more than an official making a mistake in a basketball game. But yet if I am an official, somebody criticizing me makes me so mad I can barely stand it. How dare they? You must be kidding. We've had that. You become a servant of God. And to become a servant of God doesn't mean that you are enslaved. To be a servant means that you become a committed, respectful follower of Christ. When we talk about submission to Christ, submission to the husband, there is never submission without love. Love is what drives you. The reason that you do something in submission to your mate, to your kids, to your parents, is because you love them. It is not because you're scared of the punishment at the end. While I have told you I am scared of hell, that wouldn't drive me to be here. Who knows when that's going to happen, right? Could be in 10 seconds, could be in 50 years, I don't know. But that isn't what drives me to be here. To be here is the willingness to show respect, to give respect, and to want to be closer to someone who has given me the opportunity to do these things and speak to all of you, to have the family that I have, to be able to speak and earn a living, to have parents that I still have, to be able to just have friends. The very person that's done all that is the person that I'm willing to submit now and give myself to. Being able to do that with others around you is a huge opportunity. The opportunity to be able to serve God, the opportunity to be able to serve one another. Simple thing. As simple as making a hospital visit is amazing. I think of a lady I worked with who really did not like me. Hard to believe, right? Did not like me. She didn't like me when I sold against her. She didn't like me when I started working with them. And she sure didn't like it when she had to report to me later. Did not like me. Didn't like seeing my face. Didn't want to hear my voice. Didn't want nothing to do with me. Now, we made it work while I was still working there. And I never had those feelings to her. To be quite honest, I kind of felt that vibe when I rode with her once in a while. But she never said it. She got sick. I work for a different company than she does. My friend and I went to visit her just to see if she were okay. She was. She's getting better. But that one visit all of a sudden made me start getting Christmas cards, thank you cards, and the occasional phone call, even though I don't work with her anymore. There was no animosity on my side. But yet she approached it as though there was, because it was never made clear. That act of being able to serve her and give her a little comfort while we stood there and just talked about things other than how she felt, maybe made her smile a little bit as we were there, relieved some of that pain for her and allowed her to see through her blind, raging hatred for me and accept me at least as a human. In Romans 6:22, it says, "But having been set free from sin and having become slaves of God, you have your fruit to holiness and the end, everlasting life." We need to try not to sin. Okay, I don't want to make it sound like everything is great because you have forgiveness, because you have prayer. You are not to sin. Trying not to sin and sit so that you don't have to go, well, now I can ask for forgiveness. It's big. Okay, you try not to sin. When we talk to the kids in class, when I speak to my own children, I expect them to be better than the world that surrounds them. That does not remove them from the world, but I expect them to be better. I don't think that's unreasonable. To know the direction you should go and to be expected to head that direction is something that should be conveyed. Mark said this morning, and just randomly came up in class, which is pretty cool because it ties in with my talk, that at some point, as parents, and I think about my own life when I'm talking here, my dad stopped telling me what to do, started to request that I do things, and now is there so I can talk to him about how to do things. So we went from direction to request to counsel. And somehow he made that transition through life. I don't know when it happened. I don't know how it occurred. But I know as I think about it, it means an awful lot when we can talk about stuff like big boys. Okay, and not like my dad telling me to go get the wrench. Like big boys, standing there to do that. There is one unforgivable sin. Sin has no measure beyond that. We aren't given a list of the top five, the bottom five in the sin categories. Okay, to God, sin is a whole. So when you commit sin, whether it's just lying to your folks, speeding, adulterous action, covetousness, theft, all lumped together. The one thing you remember about sin is don't do it. Easy. Don't do it. None is less or greater than the other. We compartmentalize as humans. I know we do. I do that. I think crimes and sins against children are a disgrace. And I don't think punishment will ever be great enough for those that do that. And I think God has a spot for them. Satan will have a spot for those folks that go unrepentant into that fiery hole. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Romans 6:15, what then? Shall we sin because we are not under law but under grace? Certainly not. We need you to be in God's family. We want you to be in part of God's group. All right? The people that go with God. Be part of His family. You might be the weird brother that shows up, but you're still in a family. Okay, it doesn't matter. We take those weird brothers that just show up. We want you to be here. Okay? Be in God's family. Be part of God. We want you to beat sin. And I'm sorry that when I speak that I use a lot of competitive terms. That is me. All right? We want you to beat sin. Not lose to sin. The alternative to losing is hell. This one we win. When I talk to the kids, I say that we're winners. We win. That's what we do. We win. I don't accept the other. If you didn't maybe win the contest, we expect you to win the race. We win. Okay? Don't be a loser. Win. God does not hear non-believers. Okay? We want you to be a believer. We want you to believe in Christ so that when you have opportunity and that wonderful gift of prayer that gives you strength, that allows you to release things to God on your own time, in your own place, and talk to Him as a father, Talk to him as someone that cares, knowing that there is listening. We want you to be a believer in Christ, to be part of his body. John 9:8, now we know God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. There are many steps of Christ hearing you in that prayer. First is faith and belief. Baptism. We want you to be part of that group. We want you to be part of God's family. We prepare for all things in life. Be it good, be it bad. You're not promised a fantastic trip through life. You're not entitled to a marvelous trip through the life that we live. You're not told that you're going to have 100 years. You're not given 20. You're not given 10. The life that you give is what God gives you. It is the amount of time that you have to spend here, and you have to make the most of it. There's another thing that happened to me once I had a child. All right? So all of a sudden, that life that was my own for me to do with, I don't have a curfew like Mark says. I can stay up as late as I want. If I want to be out all night, I could do that very thing. Most nights, if I can make it past 10 o'clock in the chair, that's enough. You know, big deal. We don't have those restrictions. There's no one here putting their hand on you to say, it's time to go home. Now I have curfews. I do believe in a curfew. And I believe in a curfew for dad too, that they should know where I'm at, they should know where my wife's at, they should know where we are. It's right. Prepare for all things to be good, but be ready for things to be bad. In life, you have to have that set. That you know in your mind that sometimes things are going to be tough. And because they're tough, God didn't do that to you. God didn't make that happen to you. All right? There are bad things that go on. Everyone needs to know that. We lose people we love. We see people that we love fall completely away from us with no hope of bringing them back. Friends that you care for that don't want to go down the same path as you in life. Friends that decide maybe they should do this for a while and just walk away completely, go in the wrong direction, and you cannot change them. Maybe it's your parents. All right? Loss of someone, whether it's loss in the physical body or just loss that you don't see them anymore and they go away doing the wrong things and you cannot help them. That is pain. And that is a hard, hard thing to overcome. God gives us love. It tells them that we need to give them love. Love the sinner, hate the sin. The best thing to remember that is love, because we want them to come back. And hopefully we can get them back before they're gone and they're lost. Because we want them. God wants them to be here. In Job 2, 9 and 10, it says, then his wife said to him, do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Can I think of this in terms of a job? A lot of good things in what I do. A lot of stinky things in what I do. And sometimes the stinky things are what everybody gets to experience, sadly enough. There's good in that too. And if the good outweighs the bad, you take the good and you do the best you can with the bad. And try to take the bad and make it better. That's all you can do. God does not give you any more than you can handle in this life. And at times you are tested. And it may feel that way. There are things that happen that are raunchy. And they're just not good. And in those times, you have the ability to reach out to someone who cares for you, either in this physical body, or you have the opportunity to reach out to Christ at any point and speak with him. Ask for his help. Give up the things that are hurting you so that you can have those for yourself gone. And so that then you can focus on what you need to, and that is healing and getting better. Prayer is huge, and I am a huge believer in it. That needs to happen for us. God does not test or tempt us. The devil tests and tempts you. That is who does it, not God. Romans 5:19. For as by one man's disobedience, many were made sinners. so also by one man's obedience, many will be made righteous. One gave us sin. One took it away. One gave us the opportunity to be with them in an everlasting life for heaven. There is room for everybody. And even in a building that is packed to the walls, I guarantee you that in this family, if there was anyone that wanted in and it was packed so tightly, we would still make room. I've talked about the song, There's Room at the Cross, and me being that one, I mean that. There is always room for one more in God's family. We want everybody at the end of time to be together. We are all going to be there, and there is going to be judgment for everybody. At the end of that time, we want all of us to be able to grab each other's hands and walk through heaven's streets. Many of you have things that hurt you, that are causing you pain now. Should you need the church's help, we're here for you. If you need anyone to single out in this church to talk to by themselves, we're here for you. And at the end of every service, we give the gospel invitation. So if you would like to become part of God's family, if there's something the church can help you with, if you need that help, if you want to join us, please come forward during the singing of the last hymn. Please stand.